Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program this week. My guest is Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. We'd love to have your questions for him during the next half an hour. You can always call those in to 765-496-1999. You can send an emailed question to ask@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good to be here.
Thanks for being with us as always. It seems like it's been a kind of whirlwind last couple of days for you. We'll try and catch people up real quick on what happened. And you've just put out in the last couple hours an official statement on this. There was a movie that was shooting in your city. There was a robbery scene in that movie. This was at night. A police officer happened to be called to the scene where somebody in the movie was holding a handgun or what looked like a handgun. It turned out to just be an air pistol. A firearm from the police's firearm was discharged in the general direction of the actor. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. The actor turned, dropped the gun, said, "Hey, look, we're filming a movie here." And it kind of touched off this big kerfuffle that you've been involved in the last couple of days. What's the latest?
Well, currently what's happening is we asked the Indiana State Police to come in and conduct an independent investigation. They are doing that at this time. We are waiting on their final report. That will be forwarded to the Montgomery County Prosecutor's Office, at which time they will make some decisions of whether or not, you know, there are any charges filed out of this incident. The one thing to keep in mind is that, you know, with these split-second decisions, every one of our officers, and I've said this for a while, every one of our officers wears a body camera, and we do have footage of this incident. I have the utmost confidence in this situation that our officers responded appropriately to the situation as it was presented to them at the time. And, I'm actually kind of anxious for that body camera footage to be released so that the people can see this for themselves and see what actually happened.
Let's talk about that for a second, because the county prosecutor has said that he does not want to release that body camera footage because of the ongoing investigation into what happened. But here's my thought. Nobody was hurt. If there is a trial, this video is going to be entered into evidence anyway. So what logical grounds are there for withholding it, for not doing what you ask, which is get this out as soon as possible?
Well, I'm not sure. I'm definitely not the prosecuting attorney. I'm not an attorney. I suppose there's a concern with, you know, contaminating potential jury pool or anything like that. We're willing to give him a few days to work through that process, not an extended period by any means. Let him review this, give him a few days to do his thing, and then we are open to fully laying this out and letting people see what actually transpired. And, you know, what transpired is incredibly unfortunate. This should not have happened. And at some point you have to ask yourself, what in the world has happened to common sense? You know, I mean, to think that you're going to shoot an armed robbery scene in the middle of downtown at a peak time of the day and not tell anyone that this is going on is just incredibly unfortunate. That should not have happened.
Any word on how that did happen? Like, how did they not have to give some notification that this was going on?
Well, there's certainly no requirement that anybody notify that they're filming something. So that, you know, and this is new territory for a community like ours. We're not exactly a mecca for people shooting movies and films. So, where do you create the line? People are shooting video with their phones all the time. So it's not as clear cut as saying, you know, every time you shoot, you have to notify authorities. That doesn't really make sense. But, you know, certainly some common sense. If you're shooting an armed robbery scene in a busy downtown in the evening, it would behoove of you to certainly reach out and notify someone. And in this case, you know, you have a passerby sees this happening, frantically calls 911 that they are witnessing an armed robbery in progress. It just unfolds very quickly, and it should not have happened.
Why have you been pushing so much to get that video released as quickly as possible?
Well, you know, when this happens, you have the tendency of everybody, you know, wants to sit and analyze when in reality there were no witnesses to this at all other than the person holding the gun and the officers. Even the people involved in the shooting of the movie were inside the bar. They were not outside when this happened. So you get a lot of speculation, and, you know, I know in today's society it becomes this case of, you know, well, the the victim said, or the person said this, and the officer said that, and who do you really believe? You know, that's the beauty of body cameras. It is right there. It's crystal clear. You can watch it for yourself. And in this case, the officer acted 100% the way they should have, and did an amazing job in a challenging situation of controlling that situation. And you know, the bottom line is, whether it's a toy gun or not, you know, when you encounter law enforcement, you're wearing a ski mask and holding a handgun. You do not point that at police officers, and that's what we saw happen in this situation, not once but twice, and that is just a very deadly scenario.
Have you seen the video yourself?
I have, yes.
Can you describe what you see on it?
Well, out of respect for the prosecutor and his process, you know, I won't go into detail other than to say that, you know, there was some erroneous first reports by a local newspaper saying, you know, that as soon as the person saw the police, they put the weapon down. That is not true. The person did point the weapon at the officers on two different occasions, despite being yelled at constantly to drop the gun. So, you know, people will see that in the video, and that'll be that. You know, it's unfortunate in that it happened, but we are very fortunate that it could have had a much more tragic outcome.
I believe pointing a firearm can be construed as a crime, can it not?
Well, again, I think that's why the prosecutor has asked for time to review this. You know, and certainly he will have to make a determination whether he files any charges for, you know, pointing that firearm. I don't know. That's a decision for the prosecutor.
So in terms of the actual projectile being fired in the direction of the actor, is this a sense of, can you give us a sense of whether from the video you've seen, whether the officer was actually trying to injure the actor in the movie or whether they were just trying to scare that person into dropping the air gun he was holding?
Well, I can't speak for the officer, but officers are trained to defend themselves. And from what I'm seeing in the video, this officer is clearly defending himself. You know, if someone's reporting an armed robbery, a person comes out the door wearing a ski mask and you order them to drop the gun and they point it at you, you're defending yourself at that point. So, I can't speak for his thought process, but I can tell you what I see in the video, and that is an officer defending himself. And I also see an officer practicing a tremendous amount of restraint, because this could have certainly gone much farther than it did with, you know, a person raising a handgun a second time. So I have nothing but praise for the job that our officers did in this case. It was very professional, and they handled the situation very, very well.
In terms of just giving people kind of a visual sense of the proximity of the officers to the actor in the movie, can you give me a sense from the video you've seen how far away they are from one another?
Well, they're pretty close. They're within, you know, definitely a half a block or less. This all happens in pretty close proximity in a downtown area, so it's not like you're talking about great distances involved.
I imagine officers in general in Crawfordsville do not discharge their service weapons very often. Is that accurate?
Well, certainly we've had officer-involved incidents over the years, and that does happen. And I think that's a side of this that the public needs to keep in mind, that these types of things have a profound effect on the officers themselves. You know, they don't take this lightly. They don't take these kinds of decisions lightly. And this is something that this officer will sort through for many, many years, facing the fact that he was put in a situation where he, you know, nearly took someone's life over a mistake that should not have happened. So, you know, we have to look at it from that perspective. I know the public needs reassurance, but we also have to understand that this puts our responders in a very difficult situation mentally as well.
It's interesting to me that, is it true that only one shot was fired by the officers on scene?
That is correct.
So that's interesting because you try to work through that thought process in your head. And, you know, I think many of us have probably seen some of the police videos that have been circulated around the country over the last couple of years of some of these cases that have made news where people have been shot and killed in officer-involved shootings. And I can't think of a single one that I've ever seen where exactly one shot was fired. Can you give me any sense of how that came to be? I mean, one thing I think I should ask you is there just one officer on scene or are there multiple officers on scene?
Well, there are two officers on the scene, and I really can't speak to the decisions, you know, why they made the decisions they made to do what they did. But I will come back and say that, you know, what I'm seeing, there was a great deal of restraint for whatever reason they sensed that something wasn't quite right about this situation, to show that restraint and hold themselves where they did, despite the fact they have a, you know, what appears to be a handgun being pointed at them by an individual wearing a mask. And I don't know. I can't speak to why they made those decisions, but I can tell you there was a lot of restraint involved in what they did.
So in terms of the possible charges that the prosecutor is considering, who would file those? Would it be his office? Would it be the city? Would it be a private citizen? Like, who would be the plaintiff in the case?
Well, if charges were filed against the person holding the gun, that would come from the prosecutor's office on behalf of the state of Indiana. And again, I don't have any insight into their decision-making process or what would or wouldn't qualify or would or wouldn't be involved in that process. We've just asked that they move through that in a timely manner, because, you know, it's really tough to sit in these situations and hear all this speculation when the facts are right there in video and you just want to show it to everybody and say, look, here it is, you know, watch this for yourself and see what happens. So we'll let him do his thing, let his staff do their thing, and I don't know what qualifications they will look for or not look for.
You talked about the free speech concerns that would be involved in people not having to tell the city anytime they film any sort of video, and there's certainly First Amendment concerns there. You're right. On the other hand, would the city, would your administration like there to be more than just a slap on the wrist to the people involved in making this particular video, because there was all sorts of, you're talking about the time of the officer, you're talking about, you know, a bullet, you're talking about all sorts of different things, plus whatever criminal aspects there might be to this. Do you want a message sent by there being charges filed?
I think the message has been sent loud and clear. I think, you know, a lot of people are stepping back, taking a deep breath, realizing that a lot of mistakes were made. You know, we're going to take some time to sit down and really analyze this and look at what other communities have done in the past. And if we need to take something before the council and have them consider, an ordinance change to build in some notifications, that's what we will do. You know, again, I think it's probably a dicey situation. Where do you draw that line between somebody making a film here versus the college students versus the high school students versus a family? You know, it gets a little dicey there, and so we'll have to sort through that. But you can rest assured there will be plenty of review of what happened and discussion with this particular company. We've already heard from the venue where this happened, you know, that they have a new policy in place. They will be screening these things before any shooting or, you know, film shooting happens at their bar. So a lot of things will happen. We'll look at it all, you know, and really make some decisions. But again, you have to step back and wonder what's happened to, you know, common sense in these situations. I can't imagine, you know, staging something like this in a downtown and not thinking something bad's going to happen.
Thankfully, I've never had a gun pointed at me, and I can only imagine the stress that must put an officer under. But I had somebody ask me the other day, and I guess I'll ask you, isn't it somewhat fortunate that the officer missed?
Well, I think the officer probably will tell you the same thing. He's thankful that he didn't, you know, strike him. And you've got to remember, I've heard the comments that, you know, well, why would the officer miss? Well, these are things happen in a fraction of a second. It's not like someone out hunting where they have time to set up and, you know, get their sights and do all these kind of these things happen. You know, the officer's moving somewhat, the other person's moving somewhat. It happens very, very quickly, and people will see that in the video. I think the other takeaway from this, at least for me, is the value of the body cameras. You know, our community invested a great deal of money in these cameras and in the technology and in a system that really shows its value in a situation like this. You know, we're not sitting here, you know, saying, well, it's the officer's word against this versus that, you know, and wondering what really happened. Because when people go through a traumatic situation, and I've been through quite a few in my career, it's, you know, you're trying to recall what happened, and you have so many influences on how you recall that, and then as you talk to other people, that can influence it. And in these cases, we actually have footage, and it is so, so powerful. It is literally changing everything involving law enforcement, as far as I'm concerned, from my perspective. And I have citizens who will come in and voice concerns about, you know, an interaction they've had with police officers, and more times than not, when I take the information and then, you know, tell them that there's body camera footage available and we will pull that and we'll take a look and see what happened, more often than not, they tend to want to withdraw their concern and they kind of walk away. So it puts the facts on the table, and it really does help us sort out what's happening.
Lastly, and just by way of trying to segue onto other topics, this, of course, is a thing that you don't ever want to happen for a number of reasons. But one of them might be that if you are, as you and I have talked about multiple times on this program, trying to recruit young professionals to town to make it seem fun and interesting and a good place to live, is this the kind of thing that, you know, might dissuade that, and that you're going to have to kind of work beyond in terms of recruiting people to come to live, work, and play in Crawfordsville?
Well, you know, I think in general, I mean, people will catch the catchy headline and say, oh, you know, what's going on here? But if people take time to dig in and look at the facts, I don't think it's going to dissuade anybody from coming to our community. Once everything's out and all the facts are out and people can see it for themselves, I would hope that it would give them some reassurance that, you know, I'm moving to a community where there is transparency. You know, there's no question. They release the footage so you can see it. The officers were very well trained and acted very professionally. You know, I would hope that would give someone reassurance if they're comparing us to maybe communities where that's not the case.
Lastly, is this the kind of thing where you might put the video up on the city's website for all to see or something like that, since it's been so talked about?
Well, I'm not sure if it'll be on the website. It will definitely be released to the news media, and I'm sure they will all post it on their sites and, you know, and maybe even their social media. So we know it will get put out there. I'm not speaking from a technical standpoint. I'm not sure if we're putting it on our website or not, but it will definitely be released to the public.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Call in your questions to area code 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Let's talk a little more about economic development type ideas. We talked with you after you came back from the state's economic development trip to Japan. You said you were trying to set up some meetings with people you met over there in hopes that they would eventually come visit Crawfordsville. How's that going?
We have some meetings set for October, so we're moving through that process. And you know, sometimes those things take a while, and we know that, we understand that. But we are making some headway there and some progress there. We've had some communication back and forth with both companies in Japan and developers who represent companies in Japan. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll, you know, we have some things set up over the next month, and we'll kind of go from there.
How do you prepare your city to receive visitors like that? Is it similar to what you did with, for instance, the vetting that Crawfordsville received before getting the Cellar Cities designation a couple of years ago? Or are you focusing on different things if you're looking at international investors coming in versus somebody from state government?
Well, we try to show them the things that we know are important to them, the things that are of interest to them. My belief is that you want to keep it very real. We don't stage anything that's unrealistic, because I'm very well aware of the fact that they probably have visited your community before they officially come and see you. You know, these groups are very savvy, and they're going to come in and do their homework. They want to see everyday real life in your community, not, you know, the show that you're putting on. So you have to keep that in mind and just give them a very real sense of your community and the good things that are happening, and in this case, show them the areas that can be developed and what we are doing to address workforce and some of those challenges.
So you expect them to be able to know if you're putting up a facade and see through it?
I think most people will know that, yes. And we've seen that with Stellar as well. I mean, we took the approach, you know, we want everyday normal life in our community. We don't want to, you know, have a parade and do all these kinds of things. And we've seen communities do that. But they need to see what's real. So we, as you know, didn't make big fanfare before the visit. We just wanted it to be, you know, real Crawfordsville.
You told me that you agreed with your host's assessment in Japan that Indiana's skilled workforce shortage is something of a roadblock to getting all the investment that you want. And so I want to ask you, how in a relatively smaller city like yours can you possibly compete with the sheer numbers of people available in larger cities? I was trying to think about it from a numerical point of view, and I thought, well, theoretically, if you assume that there is, for instance, one skilled worker out of every 200 or 500 people, you will lose out a little bit to those larger places that have more and more people and more hundreds of people to pull from to get those one skilled worker at a time. Does it work that way? Are you having to kind of climb that hill?
Well, those are the dynamics that you consider, but you have to keep in mind that they're also looking for, you know, what you have in a community and how you respond to things and how you will support them. And all those things come into the equation. It's not just an exercise of the numbers, but, you know, there are projects that clearly are too big. I was asked the other day, are we going to pursue the Amazon piece and Amazon headquarters, and they're requesting right out of the gate 50,000 workers. Well, you know, that's not going to work in Montgomery County, even if we pull in some surrounding counties. And it's quite frankly not going to work just for Indianapolis. They will have to pull in the surrounding donut communities there as well. Not sure they figured that out, but that's the only way it's going to work. So we know we're up against that in a smaller community, and we're looking at projects that would fit in our community. But, you know, we have to find a way to take people from unemployed or unemployable and give them the skills to be employable. That's the critical factor. And for me, it's also about growing the community. There are areas, you know, in the U.S. where people don't have the opportunity, and maybe they come here and they have that opportunity.
You've mentioned a number of different types of industries who you thought might be potential investors somewhere down the line to Crawfordsville, some that you already have, some that you were sort of surprised, you said, had expressed such interest. And I got to thinking about the idea of diversification. Certainly, we've seen that there have been a number of Indiana cities over the course of the last even century or so that have become too reliant on a single industry and have ended up having severe economic problems because of that when that industry flames out for one reason or another. But I have to ask, though, would it be better for Crawfordsville to make itself the most ready place for a single industry that it possibly could, maybe even a niche industry, so that you are kind of limiting the amount of competition that you face?
Well, diversity has long been our strong suit. If you look around at our industrial base, our commercial base, it is very diverse, and that has served us well over the years because we've not been as subject to those ups and downs of single industries. So that has been important. I think that will continue to be an important part of our strategy moving forward. That being said, we clearly want to identify some niche pieces that we try to pick up and really try to work with. And I think we've struggled with that over the years, and I think we're refining that a little bit more even as we speak. We had a discussion this morning about this, and we will try to identify some of those areas in which we're unique and we could really focus. But we are never going to put ourselves in a situation where we are all, you know, whatever. We are going to keep ourselves as diverse as we can be. There have been, you know, many recessions and bad times that this community has been able to navigate and do fairly well because we were diverse.
I see what you're saying about that, but let me just play devil's advocate for a second, because you're talking about a community that's got 15,000 to 20,000 people. You know already that a skilled workforce is something that you need to build up if you were going to get some more of these investments. If you were to focus on a single industry with a single skill set that you could try and say, look, if you have this skill set, you would be the right kind of person that we're looking to hopefully have move to Crawfordsville, which is, of course, another goal that you and I have talked about, is grow the population base, get more people to come live there. Isn't that a targeted strategy that could work and it would fit into your existing diversification?
I'm not sure. You know, I think what scares me about that today is that jobs change so rapidly and what, you know, the hot job or sector today may not even exist in 10 years. And I think we have to continue to just create this diversification that we have, try to create that and build on that, and not get locked into one thing wholeheartedly. You know, if we get strong in one area, that's good. That's good. And that probably would do what you're talking about, but I don't want to get myself locked into where we, you know, Like we've seen communities with the auto industry that just crash and burn when that goes down. And the technology and the jobs change so rapidly today that we have to keep that in mind. That is a big part of what's happening. I've seen these statistics about, jobs that exist today and they won't exist in 5 years, and the hot job of 5 years from now hasn't even been thought of yet. So we have to keep that in mind.
Let's get to one or two more things in just our last couple of minutes. Your airport has a new manager. What are you expecting of her in terms of making that airport more used and thus more profitable?
Well, I think we're going to see her take it to the next level. She has an impressive record and resume. And we've had a really strong momentum going with our airport. And we recognize that, it was time to really take it and take it to that next level. And she's going to pick it up and do that. Has really done great things everywhere she's been, and we know that we have a ton of potential with our airport, and we can just continue that momentum and make these things happen. So she has some very clear, specific goals that we'll see start to play out here in the next few months, and we expect the good things to continue there.
Why not stick with Bill Kramer, who helped oversee that transition to city management of the airport, which it is now?
Bill had done a great job for us and had been there for a number of years, and I think he was ready to retire or semi-retire. But, we wanted somebody with a specific background in education and airport management. We had identified that it looked like from the financials we were kind of plateauing, and we want to grow, not level out and kind of ride it out. So, we met with the airport authority several times saying, look, you're not in trouble here with your financials, but we're concerned about the trajectory. We want to make sure we are growing up and not flat. And they responded very well. That's a very talented group. Really went back, did their homework, and came out and said, okay, these are the things we want to do to really force this and take it to the next level. And I'm proud of what they brought us, and I'm proud of our new manager.
In just our last minute or so, I want to get to one more thing. About 2 years ago, you and I chatted briefly about a young man named Sam Jackman, who at that time was a high school freshman at Northmont High School, around whom the community had seemed to rally when it was announced that he had a form of leukemia. He passed away late last month. I wanted to get your reflections on him and on that Sam Strong rallying cry that's been in your community for a couple of years now, and what that had all meant to you and how everybody's processing that.
Well, Sam was a remarkable young man, and I recall meeting Sam and just being absolutely taken by his approach to what he was facing. And and most adults wouldn't have handled it in the way that he did. And for me, I went into that thinking that I was going to encourage Sam, and I walked out of that realizing that he had taught me a thing or two. So we've definitely lost a future leader in our community, and that has really brought all of our schools together and all of our community together to rally around Sam and his family as they went through this.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We really appreciate it. We'll do it again next month.
Okay, thank you.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember, you can find all of these programs archived at our website, WBAA.org. Tune in next week at this time for our conversation with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.